Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Guidance is internal. Ignition sequence starts. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Permission to board, please.
Permission to come aboard.
Permission to board.
Permission to board.
Do I have some permission to board that sweet mothership?
This is the Permission Granted podcast. Here's DA.
Welcome inside the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast, everybody. The show about the show within the show. And you can always get this on the DA Show iTunes podcast feed. Just go to Apple Podcasts or radio.com. Or you can check us out on Stitcher, Spotify, and really anywhere else that you get your podcasts, you can listen to this PGP. Also, you can get it on our website, cbssportsradio.com. Now, when we began the pandemic, we tried to brainstorm some ideas about segments that might work without sports going on. This was one of them, Mothership at the Movies. I would say that now over 2 months, it has become one of our most popular segments that we do. And now it's fun to figure out the movies that will elicit the most emotion and reaction. And what we found, Mraz, and we've talked about this on a PGP before, is that Disney movies are kind of perfect. They hit the wheelhouse perfectly.
Yes.
Because there's enough sports in them. They're properly cheesy. And there's enough stuff that's just unrealistic to where you can really pick it apart. It's not trying to be so realistic. So it's kind of the perfect, it's the perfect meld, the perfect mix. And they're not that long. They're less than 2 hours. So you zip through them. So I think for all of those reasons, you know, doing Rookie of the Year, now the Mighty Ducks, in many ways, Major League 2 kind of fit the same type of feel, even though it wasn't a Disney film, a little bit more for adults, but had the same, you know, plucky underdog, bad coaching, figure it out, and at the end of the day, the good guys win.
Yeah.
So D2, I would say, out of all of the films, elicited the most emotional reaction as a bad film from you two. I didn't hate it as much as you guys did. You and Bogish viscerally hated this movie. Would you agree?
I would say yes. I hated it. And I'm somebody who I've seen it a ton of times, but watching it through this lens, I think I hated it more. But I'll let you continue because I think there's reason for that.
Okay, so Bogish really hated it and said the final 30 minutes are inexcusable. And I actually didn't hate it, and here's why.
Of course.
For what it was, it creates a bit of an indelible legacy, and I like that from a cultural standpoint. You know, people refer to the knuckle puck, and they know what the knuckle puck is.
It's true.
And while, yes, you probably had all of these famous, I say famous in air quotes, like Charlie Conway and Gordon Bombay and, you know, these names, Goldberg, they appear on the back of Ducks jerseys to this day that people wear as like Halloween costumes or just as a novelty jersey. So maybe that fame would have happened in the first movie anyway. But, you know, the second movie kind of carries it through. It makes it even more iconic because they were able to keep Conway. They were able to keep Bombay. They added Julia the Cat. They kept Goldberg. It didn't splinter into a totally different team, and they were just kind of like looking to press the lever on a cash register. So I like that it remained consistent with the main players in the movie as well.
I agree with that, but I also think for every reason you're saying is every reason why I probably hated it, because when you go back and rewatch something like the Ducks, of all the movies we've seen, I think so far, and they've all been good to an extent, and I think the most critically acclaimed one was probably He Got Game. All the other ones were what they were. But the Ducks are more of like a cultural thing, right? Everybody knows the Mighty Ducks. You know, like that is synonymous with sports movies in the 90s and growing up and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think when you go back and you watch D2 and you watch it now having those feel-good feelings of the 90s and growing up and being young, you feel almost robbed, like, why was I duped so bad? Why?
Wow.
What?
That's like, a really emotional reaction to this movie.
But I really want to go back and I want to watch, and I'm not saying this from other ship of the movies, I kind of want to go back and watch Mighty Ducks 1 because I don't think Mighty Ducks 1 will come off this way. I think their reason for putting out a Mighty Ducks 2 and needing to find a different way than just playing in the same Pee Wee League, I get all that, going Team USA, all that. But something about, I just feel like the same thing as Bogus mentioned, you're missing up scores, you're doing stuff that makes no sense. Like, I wanted to bring this up, like, you're not really playing traditional hockey powers either. Had they been playing Sweden and Canada and the Czech Republic, I think that would have been cool. We're playing Iceland and Trinidad and Tobago. Like, there were just certain things that were just kind of like throwaway stuff that when you watch it, you're like, why was this so culturally relevant? This movie's trash.
I didn't think it was trash. Okay, what I did, maybe this is what I appreciated. It was so of the moment. It was Disney trying to capitalize on the success of D1, which spun them into an expansion team. I mean, the Mighty Ducks exist as a movie before the Mighty Ducks exist as a hockey team. They were not one and the same. And then because Mighty Ducks the movie was so popular, they named the hockey team that they owned, Disney owned them, the Mighty Ducks. And then they made jerseys of that era for the Mighty Ducks hockey team in real life in the NHL that they would then wear in D2 to help cross connect and merchandise. And they are very clearly trying to tap into this mid-90s sense of hockey is going to become cool. It's going to become urban. It's going to become what all these young kids play. And they tap into this with the rollerblading aspect. I don't remember rollerblading being part of D1, right? D1 is just absolutely a hockey movie on ice skates.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think I had my lines crossed because when they went skating to gather the team and they're going through Mall of America and none of the geographical parts of this make any sense that they could skate this much, but that's neither here nor there. For some reason in my head, whenever I pictured the roller skating scene, I always thought that was D1. So I don't think the rollerblades are part of it. And I would be interested to see, because there is a D3, DA, that I think the storyline.
Yeah, which I feel like if we get deep into this pandemic and we need another one, yeah, D3.
And I remember D3, I believe the storyline makes more sense because they're on like a private high school team or stuff like that. I would be interested to see if the rollerblading continues or this was just a D2 kind of craze. But, I mean, again, as I pointed out, their ability to get rollerblades seemingly out of thin air at every turn when they need them was very something to me.
Yeah, I just liked – I guess it's an interesting thing because The Last Dance has zapped me back into the 90s so intensely – watching hours upon hours of these games and these teams that I remember having watched live. And now D2 did a bit of the same thing. It was like, oh, this was the moment the Mighty Ducks NHL team was cool in expansion. They had the cool jerseys with the quack goalie mask with the duck bill. And it's in D2, and then the kids are rollerblading in D2, and they're wearing the elbow pad that you would see in like a Honey Nut Cheerios commercial. And they're doing all these things that they think is going to be part of the culture of the decade that kind of was, but kind of wasn't, kind of fell off. Like, hockey never became that mainstream.
Right.
It never
this
became...
Is at the, I was going to say, this is at the time where, like, the flaming puck starts to get introduced.
Right,
and
yes.
Stuff like that, yes.
Yes. Wayne Gretzky makes a cameo in this for really no reason, but at that point in time, Wayne Gretzky is basically carrying the flag of Sun Belt hockey.
Right.
They play a bunch of schoolyard punks, kids, a very multi-ethnic, diverse group of yeah. kids from South Central that are into hockey.
And DA, at this time, you may not remember this because I was such a I was a roller hockey player, deck hockey player. I loved hockey at this time. Like that was that's why I think I loved the Mighty Ducks so much. There was games on ESPN. They really tried to make roller hockey a thing then, where like in South or Southern California, there would be games televised on ESPN. It would be like a rink where instead of like boards right away, it would be, almost be like Tony Hawk ramps on the side where you were able to skate up them.
Wow!
I distinctly remember watching as a kid, and then so much so that you know. Arena NHL arena started to get a roller hockey teams. Like there was one that played at the Nassau Coliseum and stuff like this. This was all around that time. So this is why, like, yeah, the elbow pads and all that, like that was a thing. It was, hey, if you weren't going to play there, you had room to play in a roller hockey league or play on ESPN. It was crazy.
Disney thought they were tapping into this next cultural shift, and it happened for like 2 years, and then hockey never really took off.
Right.
Now it's still more popular today in Sun Belt areas because of Gretzky, because of expansion than it had been back then. But they thought they were onto something that they didn't quite ever get to. And when they make this film and they make the kids from South Central, who are all black and Latino, totally into roller hockey and like the tough kids that teach you lessons about life, you know, they're tapping into, I guess, what they kind of hope hockey that would then become. And I don't know. I kind of enjoyed it from that standpoint. I will also say that, you know, I don't think they thought too much about the plot. I think it's pretty obvious.
They
kind of just wanted to churn through the next film because this can't be much after D1. The kids don't look that old.
I agree. No, they're basically like the same age.
Yeah.
But I agree with you.
Was it a year later that they made this film?
I'd have to look. Might have been 2 years, but or maybe they started filming like immediately after it came out, and then it came out after that. But to your point, like they just threw things in there that made sense to them, but they wouldn't think deep about, right? Like perfect example. Like, okay, we need to have a reason that Emilio Estevez is gathering these kids again as Gordon Bombay. Okay, well, he failed to play hockey. Well, like, at what age was he retrying that exact close to the
yeah,
NHL?
Right.
Why do we not dig deep? Okay, we need to have it make sense that all of these Ducks get to play for Team USA and there won't be a tryout. Like, why didn't you think then just go on the extra step and Emilio Estevez's hard stance on taking the job could have very easily been, I'm not taking the job without my guys. Like, a little subtle thing like that would have made the plot feel less lazy. Like, there were just so many of these moments along the way where you're like, this doesn't make sense. Like, you need this setup of burning the thing in the oil barrel. Why are we doing this in the middle of the USC campus? Why isn't this done, like, somewhere else? I mean, and why did we need the scene of the unsupervised players watching girls sashay out in outfits? Like,
so bad.
Right, like, what was that? And then they make the cheesy bikini joke. Like, parts of this just, like, was so unnecessary.
Yeah, there is a scene where, because Gordon Bombay is not overseeing the team, the kids kind of go out and do their own thing, and four of them go on Rodeo Drive, and they get kicked out of all of the shops on high-end Rodeo Drive. And then finally, Goldberg had the brilliant idea to, over the intercom, tell the store owner that he is the nephew of Aaron Spelling. And so they let him in, and he says, well, my mom's looking for an outfit. And so then The shop owner has her three hot chicks models come out and model a lot of like dinnerware and casual wear for these four 13-year-old boys.
Right, but then Disney thinks it's okay to make a bikini joke, but then yet Gordon Bombay and the Iceland girl can't go out for a beer, they have to go out for ice cream. It's like they had no lane they were sticking with. It was so all over the place.
And I just felt like the movie was basically made a year after D1 because they're like, holy crap, D1 was a success. Let's get D2 pumped out immediately.
Right. Churn it out.
Get it out. Let's quickly write a script. Let's knock this thing out of the park. And let's just play this to 12-year-olds high-fiving in the movie theater. Because like the opening scene where the kids, all the ducks get together, they have the quack noise, they get all these guys. They're all rollerblading together through the city. They're like jumping over construction sites to the point where one of the construction workers dumps wet cement on his coworker, and they're like going up and under bridges. I'm like, this is basically just to make 12-year-olds high-five. Like, yeah, did you see that, man? Nice! And like the Bash Brothers, that they're just pounding right on everybody. It's like, oh, man, those guys are awesome.
Right, yeah, yeah. Fulton happens to find the three Hawks players that are in the park with the string, who somehow they happen to have the perfect amount of twine on them.
Well, weren't they fishing? I believe they're fishing, so I think that was fishing line.
All right.
The Bourbon Bell asked the same thing. Oh, they just have twine. I go, well, I think they were fishing.
All right, so you found something there. But like Fulton, who wasn't called upon yet, happened to be in the park at that time. Yeah, guys, we got him, guys. Yeah. Like, what? And these kids also, by the way, can nobody wear a Minnesota Twins hat? Like, they're wearing, like, the Hawks, like, D3 hat. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, okay, we get it. You played rec hockey. Some of this stuff was just atrocious.
I thought one really kind of questionable line of the script writing was when Gordon Bombay had them all in that tight group on the ice, and he has them all tied together. And so they have to skate as one. And then... it wasn't Julie the Cat. Who's the other female on the team?
Connie Moreau. Great score.
So I thought Connie was the tutor. That's not Connie.
I think they both might be Connie. Because you said that and that sounded right.
That would be really bad script writing. But okay.
Oh, shocking.
So maybe it's Connie. Whoever the other girl on the team is says, hey, watch your hands. I'm like, whoa.
Wow, good point.
That's saucy. A 12 or 13-year-old girl saying, watch your hands, to the other boys on the team. I mean, it's basically all fart jokes that's going on throughout the entire movie. And then there's a watch your hands. Whoa.
And also, yes, it's a watch your hands was weird. But did you notice why did – I don't even know how to say this. Why did none of the other teams have females on the team?
That's
right?
True.
Like, why was Team USA obligated to have females? And I think it was great, and it was, you know, we're all intertwining here, but none of the other, like Iceland didn't have two women on the team.
No.
I didn't understand that.
No.
Like, we're just throwing that out there? Like, I don't know. Some things were just weird about this movie. Very weird.
Well, I generally liked it, but it was a lazy, sloppy effort. There's no doubt about it.
Sure.
It was a lazy,
sloppy
effort.
It's like me producing a show, just very lazy and sloppy.
Just mailing it in. Which does make me believe that Angels in the Outfield will be the perfect movie to review.
I would agree. And I would also, I think Little Giants is another one that probably fit a lot of those qualities.
So but are we going to do, though, Talladega Nights next?
I think, this is the way I look at it. I think we have to. Number one, it's still a movie that I think a lot of people, if you're not going to catch up, rewatch, and have seen, you love a good Will Ferrell laugh. There are going to be moments that drive you nuts. And I do think, honestly, we owe it to NASCAR for being the first sport to come back. And if we're going to dive in and we're going to talk some NASCAR, I think we should set the tone and kind of hat tip NASCAR with a little Talladega Nights going in.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you one reason for pause to doing this. One, one thing to watch out for. As a Will Ferrell movie, it's supposed to be slapstick and nonsensical.
Right.
I wonder if they won't take the sports seriously at all, to where it'll be hard to really break it down, because you need movies that treat the sport somewhat seriously.
Yeah, but I'll just give you a quick rundown off the top of my head without rewatching and having seen it. John C. Reilly's character constantly not understanding that he should be going to win himself. The idea that both of these guys go to the same high school and are two of the best racers, and just the racing team coaches having major issues, the French guy coming over, he's now a phenomenon. Will Ferrell's journey and road back is the best practice, putting a Jaguar in a cat to get yourself back and race.
That's what I mean. It's not serious enough.
But, I mean, but this whole bit is, can Will Ferrell be a champion again? His whole mantra is, if you're not first, you're last. Is there missteps in his career there? I do think there might be some of that.
All right. Well, I hope so, because I actually love Talladega Nights. As a movie, I find it absolutely hysterical. One of my favorite Will Ferrell movies ever. And, you know, it's up there with the funniest films of that era. I just got to see, because you want a film that takes the sports a little seriously, sometimes too seriously.
Well, why don't we take a timeout right here, and I could just ask you this. We're really workshopping a production meeting almost on the PGP, which I think is fine. It's the cutting room floor. We have gone out of our way to make sure we watch these movies on Tuesday to debate on Wednesday. And Wednesday's the day everybody looks forward to. We should still do it on Wednesday. What if we kind of made a pact, or at least me and you made a pact, where why don't we both watch Talladega Nights this weekend and give ourselves an opportunity for change on Monday or Tuesday to watch another movie. And then best case, we've watched the movie, we have our notes ready to go. Worst case, we have time to let Bogish and company know, hey, we're going to go with a different movie on Monday or Tuesday.
It's a great idea, but now you're pulling into the question mark of Pete the Body. He's not going to want to watch two movies.
Which is why I think me and you should take it upon ourselves.
I think he usually watches them over the weekend.
Oh.
Don't you think?
So we're gonna throw Pete off. Well, I mean, I think we got to go in, but I think we also have to go in with the idea that Talladega will be the movie. So if we let Pete know that, and then we pull the ripcord, we could give Pete a pass on, hey, Pete, you don't have to go watch Angels in the Outfield or something like that. You did your homework for the week. I don't know. Personally,
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Now, the reason I bring this up, and I know you're going to get into more detail with Bogues, but I do think we're walking a fine line with Pete here. I think he's at a bit of a breaking point because I think do you think he's mad at us?
I think he's mad at the world. I think he's mad at management. I think he's definitely mad at us. I think he's just mad in general. He's mad at
life. I'm trying not to make him mad.
But here's the thing. It's unavoidable. No matter what you're going to make, I've clearly made Pete mad based on an email I got back today where I was unaware, or I shouldn't say unaware. Jock Alone was in instead of Connor Green. Connor Green's been in every other day. And we set a topic. I'll let the audience know. We set a topic list email, or I do the night before, and I include everybody who's on the show, so we're all on the same page. And I failed to include Billy Jock Alone, who's been in every Wednesday, and that's Connor Green's day off. And Pete, instead of simply CCing Jock Alone, said, hey, it's Billy today, sent a firm paragraph about how I need to look at his schedules. It's been this way. This has been this way. You need to look at the schedule, guys. It felt like a George Steinbrenner letter he would mail out when the Yankees weren't doing well. And the only retort I'll have to that is, relax. Everybody calm down. It's okay.
Well, he wasn't happy earlier in the week when we caught him in the Gronk trap of saying,
right,
I don't care about WWE, or I don't care about Gronk. And then we listened back to one of his previous WrestleMania podcast, and he definitely did care about Gronk. He was critical that they didn't use Gronk correctly.
Right. And he was texting all of us individually, who found that? Why'd you find, like, we could roll with the punches. He wasn't happy with that. He's not happy at all with the break schedules whatsoever.
I know. I'm pushing it later and later, and he's not
later
happy.
And then, you know, he's getting very annoyed. He writes break in caps in the G-chat we have going on, and you could tell that really bothers him. there's just a lot. There's a lot happening with Pete that I feel bad about. And then he wanted you to do something or fix something today, tape something, and you didn't. And then for some reason he just threw out to me in my ear, like, because what, are you going to do an Instagram story about selling candles again? Hey, can we just, like 1 + 1 didn't equal 2, you know? And look, I do feel bad. It says, Pete has been a trooper. He had to go in to Manhattan during the apex of the coronavirus while we all sat home and made fart jokes. So, yeah, Pete should be commended. But the stress of that on top of basically all rules off while no sports are going on, and I guess the lack of pride in following Pete's work and schedule making. I mean, these things, he has a resume here he's thrown at the lap that he can't take it anymore.
Well, Pete is normally prickly even when we're in studio.
It's
and so
nature.
Now everything has been exacerbated.
As quickly as you can make Pete hysterically laugh is what happened on Tuesday or Wednesday show with Schwartz and the string bean line, is as quickly as you can irritate him and anger him. And I just feel like, you know, every morning life's like a box of chocolates. You don't know what Pete you're going to get. So you just, that's the first glance. I look for an email and go, what Pete am I getting today?
Ay, ay, ay. Okay, well, more on the D2 saga with Andrew Bogish on Side B next.
All right, welcome into Side B of the PGP. It is Mraz, host of Side B and the executive producer of the DA show here on we're taping this on a wacky Mothership at the Movies Wednesday. As you just heard, DA and I discuss the holes in the plot lines of D2, the Mighty Ducks. DA loved the movie. Bogish and I, anti-movie. I think what we're learning here, Bogues, is me and you kind of have a similar taste in what we think is a good movie and what's not a good movie. And DA's movie taste is all out of whack compared to ours.
I mean, I don't understand what that means. How did he like it? What was to like about it? It was ridiculous, unacceptably so, from start to finish.
Yeah, we poked holes, and he came around to a lot of the plot line problems we had. I guess he kind of liked it for what it was, but I think what disappointed me the most in D2, Bogish, despite the fact that, you know, bad coaching, all the stuff we had fun with, is that the Mighty Ducks has such a place, I think, for me in the 90s as far as, like, that's like warm childhood memories, that when you go back and you watch it from this microscope and break it down, you're like, ooh, why was this so awesome? And then I also wonder, like, was Mighty Ducks 1 like this now that I watch Mighty Ducks 2? And I'm totally being fooled, or was this just a really bad sequel that got by on the merits of Mighty Ducks 1?
Yeah, I'm nervous to watch the original again because I don't want to dislike it the way I disliked this movie. I mean, I was watching the end last night, like, shaking my head in disappointment at the entirety of the Iceland game. From, like, plot, from technical stuff. I mean, it was just... it was like they didn't want to make the movie anymore. And, like, they just were like, "That's, well, whatever happens, happens." And they just, like, filmed it and put it together. And that was it. It was so bad by any account. It definitely, like, spooked me that it's not – it doesn't deserve the place it holds in, like, pop culture lore. Hopefully
right.
The first one's okay and we can just forget that the second one
exists. That's what I hope. I would hope that could happen. But – I don't know, folks. Like, when you watch this movie and you get fooled by the bad sequels, I think what bothers me, and we've seen this a lot with these other movies, like, why is it so hard to have a feel-good sports movie while also staying consistent with the sport?
Right.
Like, we brought up, obviously, all the problems with, obviously, the goalie change. It creates a great theatrical moment and all of that. But, like just you're blatantly skirting the rules and making it seem like things would not be illegal where... any kid growing up playing hockey is like, wait, you can't do that. And then they're going to probably come to their coaches and go, why can't we try this? It worked in the Mighty Ducks. And then these poor coaches who get home from their normal jobs have to explain to these kids, well, that's actually illegal what happened in the movie. I don't understand why we can't have feel-good movies where we play within the rules. Is that crazy?
No, and the bigger point is, like, sports by itself, like, is dramatic. Like, how many times
right.
do you say, like, oh, you wouldn't even, like, Hollywood wouldn't even have scripted that? Because by themselves, they do a really good job of being inspirational and dramatic. Yet Hollywood tries to overscript things. Like, there are so many ways to make that a good movie, and they made a mockery of everything. I mean, the sequence and they're completely, you know, they're terribly coached. They have no.
Right.
I don't even know what the right word is, respect for the game. I mean, the fact that those two knuckleheads are rolling around, taking off their helmet, cheering up the crowd, climbing the glass, and, like, just play hockey. Like, you don't have to do, like, that's, like, none of that happened. And then the roping of the Iceland player, I mean, it was just such a joke.
And also, I know you want to make what they're doing feel important. When on earth has the Junior Goodwill Games warranted that big a real crowd, that much press?
Never!
I mean, bro, they show a clip of the USA Today, and I sent this to you guys, where, like, the top part of the story is Bernie Kosar being released from the Browns. So they took a real, like, USA Today copy.
Right.
And underneath it's, like, Gordon Bombay and company doing this. Like, what? And what makes hockey the biggest sport at these Goodwill games? Nothing made sense. So you mean to tell me you're in the middle, apparently, of... I guess the NFL season had ended, but there's always these college basketball scores. It looked like it was around March Madness time, if you follow the newspaper clippings. And yet, the front page of the paper is going to be this Ducks team at the Junior Goodwill Games? Like,
I mean, seriously, it starts in Minnesota. It's in Minnesota. It's in the state of hockey. Like, any hockey fan will tell you how major the Minnesota, like, high school state tournament
right.
is. Like, that's the sequel. Like, they're a couple of years later, now they're in high school, which would be believable. They all went to basically the same school.
Which, by the way, didn't they do that in D3? Isn't that what they come back and do for
D3? Is D3 that? I don't even remember.
Yeah,
are they, like, in a private
D3,
school?
Yeah, D3 is they all go to the same private high school, and they're on this hockey team.
Okay, see, now that's fine. Like, the idea that, like, this, like, I couldn't believe that this was the idea. They're like, let's take this international, but let's have them be... the entire team for America, mixing a couple of kids who have issues, and try and beat the world. I mean, it was just such a. Did they have like 7 minutes to come up with a script for the sequel and rush it in the theaters? It was so bad.
It felt like it. It absolutely felt like it. Now, we have been getting requests about, you know, doing stuff other than the movies and the PGP. I've seen a couple tweets, you know, how you guys doing in quarantine life? No, people love the movie stuff, but I do think we need to include a couple other things here. So without DA here, we have to ask, DA now running this contest, which I think is great. He's had to switch the hashtag to tweet that meat.
Right.
From tweet your meat.
I have
to tell you, I did get a text from the Bourbon Bell during Sunday's show going, I mean, could anybody finally tell DA it was time to switch that hashtag from tweet your meat? DA has now since come on and said that he had to switch the hashtag because people just in general were tweeting meats on the grills. I don't know, like, from the get-go, why would TA think that tweet your meat in this kind of climate is a good idea for a hashtag? Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I said it on the air. I was so thrown by it because I didn't want to step into some horrible Twitter vortex of meat I didn't want to see pictures of that, like, I kept checking his social media to make sure I was doing it correctly because tweet your meat seemed ridiculous. And then when I finally posted it, I'd say the first 9 responses to my picture were like, that's some hashtag. Best of luck with that hashtag. Why would you use that hashtag? I mean, right. everyone knew it was dicey,
yes.
Except DA, apparently.
Yes, and is he going to give out a koozie to somebody else's kielbasa? That doesn't seem smart.
Yeah, that's not what the koozie's for.
That doesn't seem smart at all. And
no.
Now I almost feel inclined as somebody who makes the football food of the week to, like, now I need to up my game on the weekend. We have all these listeners tweeting these awesome things on the grill. I feel like I wasn't consulted, and now there's pressure on me to perform when I'm not even eligible.
Yeah, I know. We have to do something, and that's why I put my wings up over the weekend.
Right.
And we gotta play along and feed the hashtag and put ourselves in some danger of having some gross meat thrown in our face.
Oh, yes. Now, this is an uncomfortable segue, but let's segue to your daughter here, Bogus.
Oh, okay, that's easy.
you brought up on the show, you were out Tuesday, you finally took a little day for yourself. Your daughter, obviously not being in school, you wanted to give her the great birthday she could have while we were living in these very uncertain and uncomfortable quarantine times, and you talked about the birthday parade, but you mentioned that the birthday basically went from about 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. So we covered the parade a little bit later on. You talked about the gifts and honoring all that. I just brought up the tweet your meat. That means you, my guess is in your house, your daughter had the pick of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I'm not pretending a 9-year-old girl's a fat ass like I would be and actually cares about this food, but I'm curious, the birthday meals chosen by your daughter while you were at home yesterday.
Yeah, so she did have the whole say of the day. So I made pancakes and they took every possible topping out of a drawer or a closet. So there was peanut butter, marshmallows, chocolate chips, chocolate sprinkles, chocolate sauce, regular syrup. There was a bowl of fruit for fun and giggles, I guess. So we had a little pancake bar going.
That's cool.
And then for lunch, we walked to our neighborhood pizzeria, picked up a pie, came back, ate in the backyard. My parents came and sat 15 feet away from us in the backyard and watched her open her presents from them. Then the parade happened. Then we went to another parade for another little girl, came back, had dinner. She played with some friends that live up in Massachusetts. They did this like online thing, on Zoom, obviously, but they played like a trivia game about her that we entered the questions into.
Oh, that's cool.
And then we had cake, and then finally everyone went to sleep.
And what was for dinner?
Oh, well, it was Tuesday, and it was Cinco de Mayo, so we had tacos.
Oh, great. All right,
yeah.
That's a nice meal. A pancake pizza taco day
is
fantastic. And just a little bit briefly, because obviously, you know, I'm only going through with a 4-month-old. I think the listeners like to know this. Have you found this to become easier as the week's gone on or more hard being a parent with your kids 24/7, no school, going out to school and stuff like this during quarantine?
The weather is a huge key. I mean, I think this would be completely different if it's fall and winter.
Right.
And, you know, I'm a little nervous about all these new fears now that it's going to come back then. And
right.
We have a whole nother, swim of this. So which is going to be,
sure.
That would be dicey. But I know that the kids have been great. I mean, luckily for us, we have friends who have kids who like need extra help in school right now. And that's a struggle because, you know, you need the infrastructure, you need the teachers. And so luckily, we don't have that kind of extra layer to all of this. And they're having a good time, and we've got just enough grass and just enough stuff in the house to keep them occupied. So, no, it's actually been – I was actually joking with a friend the other day. I mean, this is obviously a really, really bad situation for a lot of people, but in our tiny little bubble here, like where we've been having a lot of fun, thankfully everybody's safe. Thankfully nobody's job has been affected by this yet. So, no, it's been pretty good.
There you go. So for all of you pounding the drum that you want some little behind-the-scenes quarantine life, I just gave you a day in the life of Andrew Bogut as a father and a father of a young lady who had her birthday celebrated during quarantine. How about that, folks?
Yeah, and who had multiple 9-year-old boys make gifts for her. So we got a whole new...
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah, we got some issues to deal with once we can leave our house.
Well, yeah, well, at least right now, legally, they can't come near her. So that's
this is true. Right?
That's good. All right. That'll wrap it for the PGP. You can follow Andrew Bogut.
At Andrew Bogut.
And you can follow me at Meraz CBS. Have a great week, everyone. We will quack you.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.